They tuck it away and run for it inside the five, and he's in for the Lions touchdown.
Barry Sanders turned around a defensive back about three times. Wow.
The guy is trying to tackle him, but he's got his back to Barry because he can't find him.
Here's a touchdown, Lions. Holy mackerel, what a run by Barry Sanders.
Detroit. There'll be a 15-yard penalty on the kickoff, but the play is not reviewable.
Welcome to another edition of the Roar of the Lions UK podcast, episode 240, Judge Judy. My name's Matthew Turner, alongside Ashley Soane, Anthony Fitzpatrick, and guest Bree Maestas. How are you doing, guys?
Doing all right. Just worried the chat's going to hate me for wearing a Tim Tebow jersey, but I thought I've got it in the closet as a meme, as a jersey I got for £20 over here. Might as well use it for the occasion.
I think that's the appropriate one to pull out on this occasion. I was trying to figure out who it was. I wasn't quite sure it was Tim Tebow. I'm happy to see it, and I'm happy to be on the show. Thank you, guys.
Really, really appreciate you coming on. And because we have you for a limited time, I'm going to skip over all the gumph and get straight to the good stuff. So Broncos at Lions, Saturday night, 1:15 Eastern time. So Ash, it's going to be a late one for us. Ant is here as well. How are you doing, mate?
I'm doing good, thanks. Hope you're all well this evening.
We are. Let's crack on with the Broncos. And Bree, let me just start with this. How the hell are we here talking about a Broncos team on the cusp of making the playoffs? And I mean, we're talking about a Broncos team that is looking better than some AFC teams that we think are powerhouses of that conference. So you're thinking about the Bills and the Bengals, and realistically, right now, Denver's the hot team in the league.
They're one of the hottest teams in the league, and they were going on one hell of a streak. Six of their last seven in the win column is nothing to shake a stick at. And honestly, they're competing against the Chiefs right now that seem to be cracking with Mahomes' recent meltdown. I think we all know that the AFC West is now up in the air, which you just said it. How did we get here? I think all of Broncos country is looking at each other like, is this real or is this a fever dream? Because to start this season, it was looking like another disastrous year after the Peyton Manning Super Bowl that we would be sitting through another slump, another losing season. Now the Broncos have a winning record. They are one game behind the Kansas City Chiefs, and the AFC, as you noted, is sort of in this blender. It is being mixed together and anything can happen right now. So I think a lot of luck, but also Sean Payton really took this team under his wing and decidedly created an identity that they're all buying into. You saw the defense start really shakily. Vance Joseph is not to be forgotten on that 180 that he's created with that side of the ball. And I don't want to just chalk it all up to luck, but I think on any given Sunday, this team could go up against just about anybody and keep it interesting. And that's if the defense is performing how we think they can and the offense at least gets it done. They still need to ramp it up a little bit, but honestly, we were asking, could they carry this through the playoffs? I honestly think they could run away with it if they continue to be consistent, and all you have to do is win the game.
And just having a look at who you've played this season, I mean, some of the losses earlier on in the year look really bad now, and then some of the wins recently look really good, you know, starting out the season with losses to, at home, the Raiders and the Commanders, and then there's a loss to the Jets in there at home as well. But then you've got wins against the Chiefs at the Bills. You've got the Vikings when they looked kind of hot too. Smash the Browns, best defense in the NFL, apparently. It's been a real turn. So what do you think's been the driving force behind it? I mean, it's a real backbone to show for being 1-5 down. And we know what that's like very recently to be 1-5 and to turn a season around. Has there been a moment here or there where you think like a switch flicked? Or is it just been that you kind of got one win and you start just running with it?
I think you get a little bit of momentum and steam, but I do want to point out that that Miami Dolphins game where they absolutely walloped us, I mean, almost to an NFL record. I think the roster, the coaches, the organization had to look at each other and really determine where are we going with this, because it was obviously the trade deadline was looming. You're approaching November. You're trying to figure out if you're going to stand pat and buy into what Sean Payton and Russell Wilson are trying to create together, or are you going to flush it all down, trade everyone away? Because there's a good chance, had the Broncos maybe lost a couple more games, that they were I shouldn't say a couple more because there weren't many to lose, but they had a direct line to trade away Jerry Jeudy, Courtland Sutton, who Courtland Sutton now has the third most touchdowns in the NFL. Tyreek Hill made that interesting. Instead of him being second, he's third now with 10 double-digit touchdowns. That's a first for the Denver Broncos offense in the last decade. So it's one of those things where they had to buy in and they had to decide whether or not they were going to let this team fall into the straits of a ninth terrible season, or were they going to step up and try to make this happen? I'm not saying it's all because they want to win. Every NFL team wants to win, but when you have the talent that you have, both offensively and defensively, and you have the coaches that you have, Sean Payton is going to be a Hall of Fame coach. You have Vance Joseph, who's trying to prove something, knowing he's a good defensive coordinator. He's a better defensive coordinator than he ever was a head coach, and he knew exactly what he wanted to run here. It just needed the time to pay off in the offseason. If you're familiar with Let's Talk Broncos, we talked a lot about a potential for a slow start. And I know you mentioned the Jets game. That's basically like referencing the Seattle Seahawks Denver Broncos Super Bowl that none of us like to talk about because that Jets game was terrible. And to reflect on it, you have to question what went wrong. But I think it was just the idea that there was too much at stake. The Jets were trying to do what they were trying to do, and the Broncos were still trying to figure things out. So now that they're on the momentum, I think that's the number one contributor to all of the success. You're finding how to use your playmakers and how to create game-changing momentum. And at the end of the day, it doesn't matter who the best team is, but that I don't want to come on here and tell you that the Denver Broncos are making it happen through sheer willpower. It's been a lot of tough work on trying to figure out what works best for Russell Wilson. It leaves a couple of scratching heads when you decidedly think that some targets are not receiving the lion's share of receptions here. But you got to think, in order to achieve a common goal, you're taking all of your best chess pieces and using them to the best of their abilities. It may look different from how you anticipated them being used. So I think it's a lot of Sean Payton is exactly playing chess, and it seems to be working out exactly how Broncos country dreamed, because I don't think we anticipated this.
Always get thinking on some offensive questions as I transition into the first and most obvious question, then I'll hand it off to you guys. Last year, it was a slam dunk take by the end of the season that the Russell Wilson trade was potentially one of the worst in NFL history. He's washed up, he's done. What are you doing trading two first rounders for this guy? Like, can you get out of this contract? Can you cut him? And he's transitioned into a completely different quarterback to me, to the one he was at Seattle. He is efficient. He's not completing a lot of passes deep, although we'll come on to Jerry Jeudy maybe in a moment. But Russell Wilson has maybe not flipped the switch into peak Russell Wilson from his Seattle days, but he is a passable quarterback who is hitting the short passes and then hitting you over the top when he bring the defense up. So what do you think of Russell at this point?
Up until this point, might be a loaded question for me because I've always had a little bit lower of a vantage point on Russell Wilson. I knew that he was kind of degrading from what he was in Seattle. The national narrative around him becoming the Denver Broncos quarterback was you were not quite sure what you're getting into, but his game has always been a bit of a roller coaster, an up and down of a lot of variability. And his strengths were always on showcase for the Seahawks. They decidedly just wanted to move away from that. Pete Carroll wanted to go in a different direction, and the Denver Broncos thought he would be serviceable enough to carry out their plans. I think it's unfortunate last year that he was matched up with Nathaniel Hackett, and I'll continue the narrative that that's one of the most absurd coaching runs I've seen in the modern era, because it was both the quarterback struggling and the coach unable to figure out how to best help a player be their best selves. And do I think Russell Wilson will ever return to his prime, into the Super Bowl running quarterback that we saw with the mobility and the understanding and I no, not necessarily, but what I think we're seeing right now is a Russell Wilson who knows what works for him and a team that knows how to get the best out of that. You're not going to get those deep balls. You're not going to get a quick game. You're going to get a Russell Wilson who has chemistry with a Courtland Sutton or knows when to utilize Samaje Perine, or realizes when the run is a better option than him trying to scramble and getting absolutely annihilated by a defense. He's become smarter in the system, and Sean Payton knew exactly what he needed to do to get the best of Russell Wilson in his 34, 35th year on this planet. And I think that's why you're seeing the successes that you're seeing. I still would like to see a little bit, and this is just talking in football terms, of I like an offense with a little bit of pizzazz. And right now it's almost predictable, but if it's working, I don't think you have to disintegrate it and get rid of it, because we see what happens when you do that. And I know the Jerry Jeudy question is looming, but Jerry exists in a pocket in which Russell doesn't prosper. And so you can't ask for a lot from Jeudy. You have to go with what's working. And if it's a Samaje Perine 7-yard catch, you have to lean into it.
Oh, funny enough, my question actually relates kind of to Samaje Perine. So obviously, we Lions fans think we have one of the best running back duos in the league, but by God, your running back trio are really efficient. Like, I love Javonte Williams. Even as an FSU fan, as you can see behind me, his days at UNC and then coming into the league were just amazing. So you've got him, you've got Jaleel McLaughlin, who's really broke out this year, especially on fantasy. Like, someone as a Javonte Williams owner in fantasy, I was weeping in shame when he was taking all the touches and scoring all the touchdowns. And as you said, Samaje Perine, someone who's a kind of cast off from Washington, kind of finding this role as, to quote the sort of like Lions role for it, the Theo Riddick, the guy who can take those dump offs and turn them to 7 yards. And if you need him to run a quick outside run, he can do that. What came together for this to happen? Because it's amazing to sort of have all these utilizing these skill sets perfectly. And just when everyone seems to have a two-headed backfield, you guys have a three. It's just hard to understand for us outsiders.
Yeah, a three-headed monster. It's like the Cerberus dog that you think of when it's just got all of the heads attacking you with teeth gnashing, which is really fun because I like the emphasis on a monster backfield. And don't forget Burton, who's back there sometimes as well. I think it's because, again, Sean Payton's really smart about how he wants to change things up and use specific role players. He wanted to use Dulcich, in that Joker role. And we obviously haven't been able to see that come to fruition. But when we're talking about the run game, a lead workhorse back is obviously the norm in the NFL. And with Javonte Williams returning from a absolute brutal injury last season, you didn't quite know if you're going to be able to lean on only him. Jaleel McLaughlin was an absolute stunner in training camp, and prior to the season starting, there was a lot of buzz around what he would be able to do. And he has a tremendous story that I don't want to mitigate, but I also want to note that the work that he's done in order to just be a very hungry individual shows on the play on the field. And then Samaje Perine, who I think leads in for running backs as far as yards per carry. I don't have the data in front of me. I scrolled past it and it's out of my mind, but I know he's lighting up the NFL as far as stats go there. I'm sure you guys will get into that and break that down. But the great thing is you don't have to rely on Javonte Williams getting 100 yards rushing every single game. You should be looking for multi-purpose yards from all three of them. And Samaje Perine has been that very dependable check down 2-minute drill guy that Russell Wilson believes in. And at the end of the day, if you can trust your receiver, if you can trust your running back, and Russell Wilson needs that trust, he needs to continue to build confidence. I think this backfield has shown that they're exactly the proponent and the catalyst for Russell Wilson to continue to succeed. I think we saw a lot of that in Seattle as well, is that if the run game is strong, it allows Russell Wilson to do what he does best. And right now, the Broncos country is kind of like, how is this happening? Because it's the perfect storm. The chemistry and the formula has been set. They plugged in the players and they found what works. And so, as long as they don't accidentally make some mustard gas and they put the wrong player in there, you can't stop this Denver Broncos team. And if you do, it's going to be because they beat themselves.
So, looking in from the outside at this offense and the way it's been built, it seems to have a really good balance with between older players and younger players. Obviously, Russell Wilson's in there. You've got Mike McGlinchey in, Garrett Bowles. We all know about him. The guys who are really senior. And then you've got a lot of young players, and Marvin Mims has come in. He looks really good. You've got, I mean, obviously Dulcich has been injured, but he's back now. McLaughlin, he was an undrafted free agent this year. Do you think they've sort of found the right balance between seniority and youthful experience? And it seems that seems to be what is driving this. They found the right mixture of youth and experience, and it's rubbing off on one another. Sometimes you can go too heavy one way or the other.
You can go too heavy one way or the other. You start worrying about the longevity of those players who are getting long in the teeth. And we saw that a lot with some decisions that have been made over the last couple of years, specifically parting with Von Miller of note and Shelby Harris, that as they get a little bit older, the team sort of decide to cut their losses. And then we start to question, well, how did we replace that? Because some of these positions, and I'll mention, you know, tight end on the offense, because that playing position requires so many skill sets that if you try to get too many of those younger guys on the team, you're going to be kicking yourself because they can't block, or they can't block up to snuff against some of these offenses. And so you saw a good balance there, specifically with the tight end group, with bringing Chris Manhertz in and then middling out that range with Troutman. Unfortunately, Dulcich hasn't been able to perform there. And so if that was in place, I think you're seeing an even more elite tier balancing effort upon the seniority of this team. But I want to point to the defense specifically. You have a lot of young players who are up and coming and are being thrust into the spotlight due to either injury or suspensions. And I want to mention Kareem Jackson, because I believe so much in his mentorship and his leadership on this team that, yes, I know what he's dealing with the NFL, not only in fines, in suspensions and ejections from games. What he has been able to teach this young roster, specifically PJ Locke and Caden Stearns, and you have obviously McMillan, who has been outstanding in coverage, is that everything that he knows how to play this game really well, decade plus in the league and learning how the league has changed around him, and continuously being on this roster. They brought him back for this kind of last ride into the sunset, for him to be able to not only start but teach these guys exactly what's expected on that field. He's been partnered with Justin Simmons for a long time. They know exactly how to work with each other and communicate, and maybe just a head nod or eye contact, and read the field and be as strong as a secondary as they are. That leadership and that blend of young and old is exactly what you spoke to. And I think it's one of the most beautiful examples of it, because of what he's been able to do, not only as a team captain, but these guys look up to him like he's a member of the family who is giving them the family jewels of how this Denver Broncos defense likes to get things done. And Justin Simmons will slowly take over that role, and he will be the old guy in the locker room telling stories about how it used to be. And the fact that the Denver Broncos are in a winning season right now, I think it feels really good for Jay Sims to be in that role and kind of in that transferring period. There was, again, in the very weak first 5 weeks of the season, there was talks about, is Justin Simmons a good trade opportunity because of what he could warrant? And now everyone's together being able to showcase that. You have players who are coming in, and I want to touch on it real quick, like Jaquan McMillan, undrafted second year quarterback, and he's an absolute phenom out there. And that's because he's had great mentorship as he goes through his first 2 years. And it's just starting to really come together. The defense started slow, but now there's no questioning where they're at.
There's a really good comment here from Depth Fan Man in the chat saying it's wild, right? Almost like this Sean Payton, Dan Campbell relationship, suddenly somehow built strategically similar rosters and play styles. And you're seeing, like we did last year, a very similar reaction to that for sure. I want to move on to the offensive line, because, and I don't think it's something that I really thought about the Broncos, they've got a really good offensive line. And then I watch the Chargers game in full, and I'm like, huh, Khalil Mack has like double digit sacks on the season. They've got, I'm not sure whether they have Bosa that game, whether he's injured or not. But anyway, the Chargers have a really good defensive line. They've got some good blitzing linebackers. They're pretty aggressive with it. And Russ had all day to throw. Majority of the game, he's just sitting back there, not really having to scamper too much. And then when he does, obviously, he does great climbing up the pocket or escaping. So it feels like your offensive line, and because of Ash saying you're so balanced in run and pass, that they're really the foundation for everything that you've been doing on offense. Is that fair?
I think there was some question marks there. The offensive line last year was the main cause of concern. And so Sean Payton went out, got Ben Powers, Mike McGlinchey. There was question marks surrounding if the center was the correct choice in Lloyd Cushenberry because he had his struggles. I think we're now trying to decipher whether or not that was coaching struggles with where the O-line coach and the coach in general had gone with what their plan was, which right now I don't think there was an actual plan in place. And I want to highlight that because you don't see overnight success from plug and play in your offensive line. It takes a while to gel. And I think you saw the slow start there where Russell Wilson was being, blitzed and pressured and was having zero time to throw the ball. And we're all wondering what the heck happened. I thought we invested a lot of money. The money was a lot. And I think a lot of Broncos country is still hung up on the cost of doing business when you're trying to grab above average O-line with Ben Powers and Mike McGlinchey specifically. If they struggle whatsoever, they're getting their contracts rubbed in their faces right now by the fans. And so I'm really glad that that's turned around. But the emphasis there is going to be the ever revolving door at right tackle is going to be a question mark. Like, we have to make sure that that's all good for next season. But you've got Garrett Bowles, who is continuing to improve, and he's the guy getting, targeted by Williams and by Mack, and he's able to stand his ground. And you're still seeing some of the old habits creep up. And I don't want to say that he's a perfect player, but there was concerns that Garrett Bowles, and specifically the injury he suffered last season, was going to be a disaster for Russ, who does need a little bit more time to throw the ball. I think one of the last plays from the last game, he had like 6.5 seconds in order to get rid of it. And like, that's not ideal. If your quarterback needs that much time to throw the ball every single time, you have an issue. But we're seeing that as long as you build that confidence in his decision-making, he feels less pressured to make those risky throws. You're seeing less interceptions from him. You're seeing more touchdowns at the end of the day. That's all I really care about. But I want to give flowers to the offensive line. Lloyd Cushenberry has stepped up. He is anchoring on his sides. You've got obviously a Quinn Meinerz, a tree busting absolute beast who is throwing people around. And he's able to also toss the running backs forward to gain a couple more yards. And when you're in a really sticky third down situation, you really want to be running with Quinn Meinerz. So I think this line has improved, but they've also gelled enough to where that chain link fence doesn't have a weak link where we're questioning our sanity on why Russell Wilson is backpedaling for his life. That's the last thing you need in the NFL, specifically going up against some of these great defenses. When they figure it out and they're forced to be reckoned with. And I try to be not so, like, I feel like I'm so optimistic right now. If you talked to me 5 weeks ago, I was probably crying into my water bottle. Just like, I don't know what's wrong. I don't know how to fix it. And why did we get here? And why are we screwed? And right now I just feel like it took a little bit of time and patience. And if you stick to the game plan and you know what your strong suit is, and right now the O-line seems to be just hammering out of the park.
Let's transition to defense, because I know that we're running a little short on time. You started off with maybe historically one of the worst defenses in NFL history, in the first four games especially. And I don't know whether a switch has really flicked, but I think if you have a look at the PFF grades, Denver, the 31st overall defense, really doesn't tell a story of, say, the last nine games or so where you guys have been... I mean, the passable defense is maybe the bar at the moment, and you guys have been passing that. So what do you think about the overall defense at the moment? Because I know that a lot of the Lions content contributors have been saying, oh, you can still run on this team, for example, but you've been getting plenty of pressure. It's a very aggressive defense. You got plenty of sacks in there. So what do you think overall about the defense at the moment?
I feel like I'm crazy for coming in here really high. Like, I'm higher on the defense than I am on the offense. And I think this is because Vance Joseph can basically make a really great claim to being assistant coach of the year here with the defensive turnaround. So the Broncos defense, the ranking since week six, their first and third down percentage, their second in points per game is 16. Their second in touchdowns per game, that's 1.1.5. And then they're tied for first in takeaways. A lot of what I think the Doubt comes to mind with the Denver Broncos defense is that they can't sustain the turnover ratio. Well, people have been saying that for about 6 weeks now. So I think the idea that that's not sustainable has been proven wrong. And I'll go on to say that they'll probably have some turnover luck come Saturday against the Lions, but I don't think it's all luck. You have some tremendous playmakers out there. I want to point to Patrick Surtain because in man coverage, when he's the nearest defender, his completion percentage allowed 39.1. That's the second overall, like among all cornerbacks, and that's 49 of them with 20 or more targets. The passer rating allowed 32.2. That's first. His yards target allowed, he's also in first, and then snaps allowed first. So Patrick Surtain is not the only playmaker on this team, but he's the one that you have to highlight because he's the common household name. You have PJ Locke, who since returning from injury, he's stepped up in the absence of Kareem Jackson. And honestly, he's a game changer. He's critical in a lot of close situations in the red zone. Clutch moments, he's been locked down, and he's been exceptional in the blitz. You'll see Vance Joseph really favors the blitz, and the timing and speed from PJ Locke just works out miraculously when he gets off clean. The Broncos defense is going to have to challenge Jared Goff, and I know we haven't really mentioned the Lions much right here, but you got to make Goff as uncomfortable as possible so that it's only the run game that the Broncos have to account for. And Vance Joseph has been instrumental in taking the players, and I say this about Sean Payton, but I think this is why it's a good pairing. He's instrumental at taking players at what they're good at, and Locke's been earning the starting role. I think that's who will be the starter when K-Jack comes back, but I don't want to forget about McMillan because in his first two seasons, two sacks, two interceptions, two forced fumbles, and two fumble recoveries. He's only the third undrafted player in league history to reach those numbers. It's not a shock. It's not like we've found these diamonds in the rough, but it is a lot of getting the right talent and building the right defense. And Vance is a very aggressive defensive coordinator. And I think as long as he's putting these guys in a position to succeed, you're going to continue to see those turnovers. You're going to continue to see it just stand up against everyone else. Hopefully I didn't get too far off of what your original question was.
No, no, no.
I'm very bought into this defense because I think they are the difference maker. And a lot of the time of possession isn't going to be great for the offense because they just can't convert that third down. They just can't get the points on the board. Your defense is the one making all the changes. Defenses win championships. Right now, the offense is all right, middle of the pack. I'll take that over anytime. But if you have a top five defense, which they will or not to start this year, I think it's just looking a lot better across the board. So I'm excited for what they're going to finish this season at. But right now, they've completely turned around. And the narrative, I think, needs to be shifted a little bit that, yeah, it looks bad to start the game. I get that. And they're 30th in total defense. They're 32nd in rushing defense. But we shouldn't look past. And I Lions fans are going to go, well, that's where we got them. I think their playmaking ability is what changes the momentum of games and why you're seeing a lot of these like, whoa, I didn't think they were going to win that one.
I know you have a hard out in a couple of minutes time. So, Ant, if you've got a very quick question, and then we're going to go to the Lions matchup.
I was just going to say, it's quite a fairly young defense. When you get past the first string, there's a lot of new rookies and that in there. So is it a case as well that it's just been a hard learning curve for them, and that's where they're at now? It's a young group learning, getting better.
Yeah, I think that you alley-ooped me there because that is the easiest way to describe that. You got the oldest players in Justin Simmons and Kareem Jackson, and you know Jackson's time may be ending with the team. I don't know, but I hope not. But also, it may be time. He has been in the league for a very long time. You've got all these young guys who, one, are very hungry to learn, but you have to put them in a system that puts them in a spot for success. And I think the balance there has been, they're all learning. Caden Stearns was injured to start this season. And so he wasn't able to take on the role that was basically a shoe-in for him. And so it was, who's next? Where's the depth on the secondary? The linebackers are doing a great job too. I think they're kind of middle of the road there, but it's a young squad who's learning a lot of new concepts. And no matter how much that people want to anticipate that Vance Joseph was somehow running it back with a Vic Fangio defense and that nothing was really going to change, it was a change. And there's a variability stability there that we knew that there was going to be regression in the defense. We predicted it. We didn't think it would swing so violently. And sometimes you have to get really bad and hit rock bottom to start jessening up and hitting off the bottom of the pond. And I think that's what they did. I think it was a lot of learning, a lot of what guys were going to step up. It's not like you could have written down this starting defense from top to bottom for where it's at right now. And it's been a lot of trial and error. A lot of the safeties and cornerbacks who were on the team last year are not represented this year. And unfortunately, that's the way it goes when you're roster building in that secondary, is you can never have enough cornerbacks in this defense. You can never have enough safeties who are healthy and ready to go. And these guys kind of have been thrust to cut their teeth. I think that's what makes the best learning environment, though, for what you're trying to do in any modern day NFL defense.
I know we've hit our time, so very briefly, quick score prediction and maybe a couple of reasons why, and then where we can find you.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll start with where you can find me, BreeMastis303 across the board, whether it's on Let's Talk Broncos, the 0 to 60 podcast, which is a little more broad-based NFL and college football, or you can listen to me on the radio sometimes with 850 KOA here in Denver, Colorado. Twitter is where you can contact me the most, but I am on Instagram, so I believe I'm tagged in all of these posts. As far as a score prediction goes, I am going to go... I got to pick the Broncos. It'd be weird if I didn't, but even fanatically aside, I think that the Broncos can pull this off. The Lions are favored at home. Home field advantage gives you about 3 points. It's about a 2-point differential here. So I am probably going to say this game is close because I like nail biters. Let's do 24-21 Broncos, just because I think they will, they probably won't cover. They'll probably ruin everybody's Saturday. But the idea here is that the Denver Broncos are on a tear. And you said it when we started this, they're the hottest team in football for a reason. And until someone stops them, I don't know if they're going to finish in poor straits. You've got the Lions, the Patriots, the Chargers, and the Raiders. I'm feeling really, really confident here, guys.
I don't blame you. I picked you a few, well, 2-5 or something. I was like, oh, no, this looks really good. And I picked you for the playoffs and I feel vindicated. Thank you so much for coming on. Good luck for Saturday, but not too much. Enjoy it. And hopefully we'll speak again soon.
Thank you guys so much for your time. I appreciate being on and I can't wait to do it again. But hopefully I'm smiling the next time. So
fingers crossed. See you soon. Thanks, Bree.
Bye.
All right. Fantastic stuff. Shout out to Brandizer for suggesting her, because that was terrific. Boys, any thoughts there on what Bree said before we move on to our usual programming?
Sounds eerily familiar, doesn't it?
It really does. It really does.
I know about 500% more about the Broncos than I do in that 20 minutes than I have from this season. So
there we go. Well, I mean, this may not be as useful, but we're going to do it anyway because it's our thing. And so we start the show afresh, and I'm going to give you the preamble that we normally do just because I want to advertise to you just a little bit. So come and join our Discord channel for this Saturday's Broncos matchup. It's going to be a lot of fun. As you've heard, it's going to be a tough game, so you might need some emotional support. And that's where we come in. Links in the live chat right now. College Football Podcast, that was early this week. I'm about to put it up on the podcast feed, unless you're doing that, but on YouTube and Twitch. What did he talk about?
We went through all... We sort of just had a little reflection on bits, the head coaches, everything that's changed. We've been chatting about that, or about all the college football awards, the transfer portal, bowl games. There's all sorts going on at the minute. So it's a little bit of everything this week.
Of course, don't forget to add Lions Nation Unite on their Facebook group, facebook.com/group/LionsNationUnite. Herman Moore's projects bring the best in Lions content creators together. Please don't forget to like this show as well. Sub to the podcast, all of that stuff, especially if you liked Bree's contribution there as well. We'd love to get the likes up. As well, don't forget we are Twitch affiliated, YouTube monetized, and we've got a tip jar down below. So if you did enjoy it and want to show some love, we'd appreciate that very much. We also have our merch store open. Link is in the chat right now. I'm not sure if we can deliver for Christmas, if I'm honest, because I don't handle that bit. But, you know, everyone appreciates a New Year's gift, right? Link's in the chat regardless. Right, so let's start off with the news. And we have some roster news. The defensive lineman and popular player, Quinton Bohanna, is not on the Detroit Lions any further. He has been signed off the practice squad to the Titans active roster after they placed some players on injured reserve. To replace him, we have re-signed the defensive lineman, an undrafted free agent of this season, Chris Smith. He's back to the practice squad. He is an interior defensive lineman, so it is a like-for-like replacement. I believe he was a Notre Dame backup interior defensive lineman. He moved over from Harvard, if I remember rightly. Thank you, Ash. Defensive back, Chauncey Gardner-Johnson, medically cleared and hopes to return to practice next week. Will not have his window opened this week, but looks like he will start practicing next week with a view to getting back on the team within that 21-day window at some point, hopefully sooner rather than later, giving that DB room. And Dan Campbell also revealed, boys, that he's hopeful of having all five offensive linemen starters fit for Saturday. And the impact of that cannot be overstated. I know that we have had some troubles with, let's say, Decker. But the biggest problem really has been just having the backups in, and having all five fit can only help our chances on Saturday.
Well, it's a continuity issue. You know, you're better when you're working with a group of four guys who you play with all the time, and they're the best players on the team. So, you know, individual performances can be affected by not having the collective together. So to have them all together will be wonderful, because the few times we have had them this year, we've looked pretty damn good. And, you know, you want your guys fit at this point. It's great that they are all ready, and hopefully, you know, this is our biggest game of the year. By far, like, we're at a crescent point here. We could go in one or two directions. We need everybody healthy. Everybody is practicing, which is fantastic. And if everyone's good to go, then it's just the right time for this team. So I'm just delighted that they're all back. We really, really, really need them.
And Ash, I know you're a big fan of Chauncey. I know you've called him CD Deuce. I still don't know whether that's actually official or something.
He has officially changed his name to CD Deuce, hence where I put the knee on the, yeah. He did tell us. He did tell us 20th of December he'd be back. We know a week early he's going to be there. Hopefully, he probably won't be fully back for the Vikings game. He'll probably have the 10 to 15 snaps into the rotation that we've seen with some of the players, but playmaking ability on the back end, communication will hopefully get fucking sorted out, because we actually have a veteran there who understands the scheme, because that's been the big issue, I think, the past couple of weeks, just with the change in the guard, with obviously Tracy being benched, all the different things going on, there wasn't really that communication. And case in point to that, the massive conversion to DJ Moore for a touchdown last week, where Eberflus came out today and he says, the reason that works is because if he lined up in a way they weren't expecting, and it just left the go ball for DJ Moore open. Hopefully having CD Juice back there now will sort that out, because we need to stop giving up the big passes to wide receiver ones.
All right, let's get into this matchup in particular. So Broncos are 7-6. Their expected wins is 5.9 per Pro Football Reference. So they are over a game above expectation, according to their metrics. Their game so far, and we've mentioned them before, but I'll go through them again. Losses versus Vegas, Washington, and Miami, at Miami. Then a win at Chicago. Losses against New York Jets and at Kansas City. A win against Green Bay, Kansas City, at Buffalo, versus Minnesota, versus Cleveland. Then a loss at Houston before a win this weekend just gone. At the Chargers, the betting for this game, the Lions are 11-5 on. That means that they are -210 in American money. Broncos are 9-5. That makes them +180. That makes the Lions -4.5 on the spread. And the over-under is a staggeringly high 47.5 points. The injury report for this game, I do not believe is out for Thursday as yet. I do not think so. However, the Lions are as healthy as they have been potentially since week one. Taylor Decker, Benito Jones, Frank Ragnow, and Josh Reynolds all limited in practice. Josh did nick his back, apparently, and he wasn't designated on the previous day, so we're going to see what happens with him. Hendon Hooker has been full practice both days. Now, I fully anticipate that he'll still not be activated onto the main roster until after this game, but it is a really good sign that he's not got any sort of designation really whatsoever, apart from full practice. The Broncos, on the other hand, are missing a few guys. Nick Benito, who is their sack leader, and PJ Locke. They both did not practice on Tuesday or Wednesday. Samaji P. Ryan as well did not practice yesterday either. He was full practice the day before, so he's done his knee. God knows whether he's going to go or not. We also had Jonathan Cooper, the outside linebacker, limited. He's the second highest sack leader, I think. So two really important guys for the team, limited. Otherwise, Quinn Miners and Greg Dulcich, full practice. And Dulcich wasn't listed on Tuesday because he had his activation window from IR done today. So it's his first day practicing since, I think, week two. So it's been a long time out for Greg, which Bree talked about earlier. On IR currently, you have the wide receiver Tim Patrick. I think he's surely done for the year. Cornerback Kaywan Williams, tight end Greg Dulcich, and then the safety Caden Stearns, we mentioned already. Guys, the Broncos are suffering a little bit with injury just as the Lions are becoming healthy. And I mentioned that the Broncos were getting after it and starting to really rack up the sacks. But when you have the man with 7 sacks and leading the team, Nick Benito, and the man with 5.5 sacks and second in the team, Jonathan Cooper, is your starting outside linebackers maybe not going this week, that's a big concern for them.
Yeah, especially with us hopefully having all our offensive line of starters back, because they've gone from it kind of being a plus matchup in their favour with 2 in 4 edge rushers against an O-line that looks as shaky as the walls of Pompeii during the eruption of Vesuvius, to suddenly us having a strong wall now in front of them. And the fact they're probably going to have to start former Central Michigan Chippewa Thomas Inkoom at outside linebacker. Like, this has gone from worry town for us to suddenly kind of matchup that goes in our favour. So it's good news. Obviously, Dulcich coming back for them is kind of bad news. We've had some issues against tight ends again this year, and Dulcich coming out of UCAA last year, really good receiving tight end. And as I'll say on my preview tomorrow, their current starter with him out, Adam Trautman, hasn't been the best tight end this year. So him coming back moves the needle a bit for them, but as Bree quite rightly pointed out, Russ doesn't really look over the middle. It's pretty much Cortland Sutton on the outside, and then the running backs. He's kind of the inverse of Goff, where Goff likes to throw inside the trapezoid. Russ doesn't. He likes to throw outside it. So it's almost a battle of matchups in a way, in terms of QB styles as well as obviously teams.
And this healthy, or getting healthy, Lions versus, Bree talked about the Broncos, talked a lot about P. Ryan and what a big impact he's had, and did not practice yesterday after doing his knee, I think I said. It could be a big loss as well as those outside linebackers. It's huge.
Not when you've got 3 really good running backs. I think you're going to be in good hands with Williams. He's your lead back. He's the main guy. He's got a great backup. The edges are a concern, but at the end of the day, they are a team in form. So, and they're a team that can deal with injuries. As we mentioned, it's a very well-blended team. You know, you've got a lot of experience on there. You've got a lot of talented youngsters on there. And when they're in form and winning games, they'll find a way. And, you know, you can't understate the fact that it's Sean Payton on their line. He will find a way. Vance Joseph will find a way to attack you. Doesn't have to be from the edge. He'll go for your interior. The interior is struggling. Frank, we know, is hurt. You know, we've been bleeding precious through there recently. So they'll find a way. Obviously, it's better for us that they're not on the field, but they're still going to be a very tough team to play against, and we're going to have to bring our best to beat them. Like, coaching alone and the form alone is a big hurdle to overcome.
We have had Lost Oceans on Twitch redeeming 3,000 channel points for Matt Has to Drink a Beer. So I'm going to run down the Denver Broncos depth chart and leave it to you while I go and retrieve one from the house. So, without further ado, here are your current Broncos depth chart. Russell Wilson, a quarterback, backed up by former Raiders starter Jared Stidham. Running backs are Javonte Williams, Samaje Perine, Jaleel McLaughlin, and Dwayne Washington. Wide receivers, Cortland Sutton, Marvin Mims, Jerry Jeudy, Brandon Johnson, Lil Jordan Humphrey, and then, of course, Tim Patrick and Jalen Virgil on IR. Tight ends, Greg Dulcich coming back, Adam Trautman, Chris Manhertz, and Nate Atkins. Fullback, Michael Burton. Starting five on the offensive line, Garrett Bowles, Ben Powers, Lloyd Cushenberry, Quinn Miners, and Mike McGlinchey, backed up by Cam Fleming, Quinn Bailey, Luke Wattenberg, Alex Forsyth, and then Alex Pasewich on IR. On defense, with a 3-4, so the down three men are Jonathan Harris, DJ Jones, and Zach Allen, backed up by Matt Henningsen, Mike Purcell, and Elijah Garcia. Outside linebackers, Nick Benito, who may not go, and Baron Browning starting in relief of Jonathan Cooper, potentially, or Jonathan Cooper. I mean, they have Browning starting over Cooper, ESPN, but there we go. Also in there backing up is Thomas Inkoom and Ronnie Perkins. The inside linebackers, Breece are average. I'm a big fan of these two, Alex Singleton and Josie Jewell. They're backed up by one of Ant's draft crushes of this year, I think, in Drew Sanders, as well as Justin Stranad and Ben Neiman. I don't know if that was probably butchered as a pronunciation, but there we go. The back four are everyone's favorite trade candidate at the deadline, Pat Surtain. You couldn't get him for two ones. PJ Locke, Justin Simmons, and Fabian Moreau, backed up by Damarian Mathis, JL Skinner, who I think we were all fans of JL Skinner, weren't we, in the Boise, in the draft cycle as well. Dalaran Turner Yale and Jaquan McMillan, we talked about a lot. There's also Tremon Smith and Riley Moss back there. And then the kicker is Will Lutz. He had to do it, didn't he? He had to bring him back, as well as the punter Riley Dixon. The returner is Marvin Mims, and the long snapper is Mitchell Fraboni, who sounds like he should be playing in New York for sure. Boys, thoughts on this Denver Broncos depth chart as it stands?
Good. They've got, well, as we said, got strength across the board. Like, Russ, maybe not back at the top five QB level he was in the like mid to late 2000s and 10s, but he's been a pretty good QB this year. Obviously, I've already gushed about their three-headed monster running back, but Dwayne Washington, what a throwback that is. If you remember, he used to be on our squad way back in the day, as did Michael Burton. He started with us, I believe. So former line connections there as well. Offensive line's really good. Cushenberry's probably the weak spot, but they're pretty damn good. And then on the defense, there's some good, as you said, good youngsters when you've got, as we said, JL Skinner, who Ant was on really early last year from Boise State as a backup. Riley Moss, who Wright absolutely loved as the speedy white cornerback out of Iowa. He's someone going to be picked on, but obviously, as Bree quite rightly points out, McMillan has been really good at slot corner for them this year. They've got strength and pace. Like, I like the linebacker room as well. Perhaps not so much the edges, but yeah, Josie Jewell, ever since they picked him in the fourth round all those years ago, I remember when they picked him. I was on the way home from a football game and I was watching the draft on my phone and I remember them picking him. Singleton was okay, like, was good in Philly, just was a cap casualty. And then obviously Sanders, the converted edge turn linebacker who, out of Ant's favourite team, the Razorbacks. Even Ben Neiman, like, he's had some starting snaps for them and he's all right. Like, they've got good players. It was just, they're sort of, they needed that gelling in period the first couple of weeks to work out exactly what the scheme is, and now it's completely working for them. So, and obviously that's not even saying their best player, which is Pat Surtain, PS2, man. Like, what a guy. Like, if we had him, most of our defensive problems might be sorted, because there's a guy who can lock down wide receiver ones, because that's our issue this year, is just we can probably cover the wide receiver twos and the slots and the running backs well. But those wide receiver ones, they just burn us like hell, man.
And what do you make of this Broncos lineup?
I love the way the roster's been constructed there. It's just a really good balance of veterans and young players, like, completely throughout this team. You've got the veteran quarterback, which is the biggest thing of them all. Your running back room is really young. Javonte is his second year. Jaleel, you know, he's been of sensation for them, young, but they've got the experience. You get Perrine in as well, obviously not for this game, but he's the veteran presence in the room, bringing the experience for those two younger guys. Your wide receiver room's fairly young in the grand scheme of things as well. You've been bought Marvin Mims, who's looked really good this year as well, has just added to that young dynamic duo. And then on your offensive line, you've got, again, mixture of young and old. Quinn's looking really good now that he's had a couple of years to get his feet wet in there. McGlinchey is getting better. He had a bit of a rough year last year. Bowles, like I said, is getting better and better. And then you go onto the defense, and it's exactly the same. You've got a mixture of experience and heavily talented young guys in there. The linebacker room, Singleton, really good. And then you've got Baron Browning, they got in the other year. You know, he's starting now. He fell criminally low in the draft. I remember when he fell, it was like there's no reason for him to. He's starting there now. They've got a starting linebacker back end at third round, and it's crazy for them. You go into the secondary, and this is the big difference they have over us in the secondary. With Simmons and Surtain, you've got number one guys in your secondary who you can build around. We don't have that in our room. This is when she's talking about how their defense is getting better and about how the young guys are learning rapidly and it's all coming together. It's because you've got ones in there to do it with. We don't have a one at cornerback. We do have a one technically in Gardner Johnson, but he's been injured all season. We've not had him in there. Like, if you take Surtain and Simmons out of this team, those other guys in the secondary don't look as good. They don't develop as quick. And that's the big get they've got over us in regards to it. But all the way throughout this team, it's blended perfectly. And you can see why it's coming together now. It was a rough year last year for them because the vets weren't doing it, but the vets are doing it now. And it's rubbing off on the younger players. And after a bit of a rough start this year, it was like with us last year, we were working things out. But when it clicks, it clicks, and you see sort of the end product starting to come together, and that's what you're getting with this Broncos team. They've put a lot of capital into getting big players into this side to turn it into a contender, and you're starting to see that come to fruition now. So, actually, out of all the teams in the NFL, this is one of the most balanced, and I really like how they've been able to do it. They've just drafted so smartly, and they got the right guys in at veteran. They're finding the balance, and they're becoming a really good team.
So let's move on to the statistical. I can't speak. Sorry, guys. The statistical. Look, I really need to enunciate more easily. Right. Statistical look at this team. And overall, PFF have them as the 23rd team in the league with a 74 grade. Offense, 74.3 is 13th. But as I mentioned before, defense in total, 59.4 is 31st. In DVOA, those figures are 18th overall, 15th on offense, 30th on defense, so very, very similar. Although somehow the aggregate moves them up to 18th as opposed to 23rd. Not sure how that works, but there we go. On offense, they are a team, like all of them these days, that operate mostly out of 11 personnel. However, they're one of the ones that I see run a bit more 12 and 21 personnel and 12 with a heavy look and 22 as well. So sometimes, especially with a three-headed monster, you can see them getting two running backs on there a bit more than usual. The quarterback, Russell Wilson, we've obviously mentioned a lot today. 254 completions on 378 attempts, 67.2% completion, that is. 2,609 yards, 23 touchdowns, 8 interceptions, passer rating of 98.3. QBR of 49.8. He also has 69 rushes for 315 yards. And that's a 4.6 yards per attempt average and two touchdowns on the ground as well. All adds up to a PFF grade of 79.8. Javonte Williams is the lead back, one of my favorite players to come out of the draft since I've been doing any sort of looking at the NFL draft. 170 carries, 650 yards. That's a 3.8 yards per attempt and one touchdown. Also in the air, 32 of 41 for 180. That's 5.6 yards per catch and two touchdowns. PFF grade of 65.7. The wide receiver, Cortland Sutton, is their lead receiver. 53 catches on 79 targets, 699 yards. It's 13.2 yards per catch and 10 touchdowns for a PFF grade of 75.5. Other good grades in there. And let's spot a theme here, guys. Guard, Quinn Miners. Tackle, Garrett Bowles. Center, Luke Cushenberry, 85, 76.8, 71 respectively. Ash, you already mentioned the bad grade in there. Adam Trautman, 52.1. This team is not so great on third down. Bree alluded to it already. 61 conversions on 165 attempts is 37%, which is good for 21st. When they converted their first third down against the Chargers last week, I think they said it was the first time in six quarters of football that they converted a third down, which is just shocking. So there you go. 7 of 12 on fourth down is 58.3%, which is eighth. They clearly don't go for it very much on fourth down, so it's not very much in the Dan Campbell mold. Somehow, he is more... I mean, but he's got a reputation for being aggressive, guys, so I don't really understand the fact they've only gone for it 12 times. Maybe they just don't get in the right situations, I'm not sure. Red zone, 24 touchdowns on 48 trips is 50% exactly, which is 22nd in the league. And when it comes to this offense, it all starts with Russ. And he was awful last year, but he really has turned into at least a passable quarterback. And actually, if you have a look at the Chargers game, he's slinging it out there.
I mean, I think he's a bit more than a passable quarterback. We all know he's a very good quarterback. And we all know the issue he's had is his offensive line. It was trash last year. You know, they invested a lot in it. And McGlinchey looked like one of the worst right tackles in the league. And we all know that he's not. He's actually a high-level one. And he's come good this year. Miners is coming good this year because he's gaining experience in the league. Bowles has always been a solid left tackle. And, you know, he's that guy. You like a guy like that who's just going to be solid, dependable year in, year out. And they're giving him more time to be him. This is why it's been a long, arduous process for them since they've got Russ, like 18 months. It's been tough for them, but you can see it starting to come together now. Peyton's obviously been very patient with it. He's one of the best for a reason. He doesn't just tear stuff down and go again if it doesn't work after a few games. He knows what he's got there. And I think, you know, offensively, you're seeing it all come together. It all starts with the offensive line, and that has been better. It all starts with having Javonte Williams healthy for them, which is better. Jameel McLaughlin has come in and worked, you know, whether Williams has been out or whether he's just been the hot hand and they've ran with him, he's come in and done his job. So the offensive line has come together. The run game has come together, which in turn means Russ is able to get his confidence back and he's starting to look better as well. Don't forget, they are in a very tough conference when it comes to defensive lines. Like, you know, six times a year, he's going up against Max Crosby, Bosa, Mack, you know, Carl Laftis, all these really good guys. Clark, until he got traded. It's not an easy conference to look good in. And, you know, again, it's just been a big learning process. But everything is starting to come together. They don't necessarily score an absolute ton of points on you, but they're a well-efficient, well-oiled machine, which is what we know Peyton does. So, yeah, we're just starting to see good Russ again because the team around him is looking good as well. It wasn't all on him last year. He's kind of sold out and left to die. So we should be worried.
Ash?
Yeah, I completely agree. Like, Peyton is coming and I will hold my hands up and admit, people that watch the season preview show will know I said this. I thought the Sean Payton hire wasn't going to work. I thought it was going to be like the John Gruden hire for the Raiders. And first couple of weeks, I was laughing. But now he's turned around and he's got the last laugh on me because he's absolutely turned this team around. Hackett couldn't hack it as a head coach. Like, you could see me pause as I realised the point that was coming. One of those where it wasn't a good head coach. Was an okay offensive coordinator and probably was made to look better than he was by the QB he was looking after. But he's kind of earning his stripes this year with the Jets. Like, he's making Zach Wilson look a competent quarterback at times, which is surprising. But Peyton's come in and gave this team what he needed. Yeah, he's done it by bringing in some of his own guys. Obviously, Trautman he brought over from New Orleans, Dwayne Washington, someone he picked up off the scrap heap after we cut him as a UDFA, and it's been like kind of like his Craig Reynolds the past couple of years. Brought him in, brought in Will Lutz after the Saints sort of cut him. He's brought in his own guys to sort of instill that culture, kind of like how we've done, but he did it on a faster rate because he's been there, done that. If you listen to Ash Thompson's podcast for the DLP, like sort of looking at him, despite the fact of him murdering the name of Leicester, which is a nuclear wasteland of a town, so it deserves it, but it's Leicester. Not
come on, man. Leicester. We might have a fan there. What are you doing?
But as you know, I had to put it in there. But you know, he's been there, done that. And you can see it. The innovation we have, as Ash quite rightly points out, is what Dan Campbell and Ben Johnson have learned from. First guy to install pulling guards and pass protection, all this stuff. Okay, yeah, right now the offense is kind of vanilla for them, but he'll start building on that. It might be, and I hate to say it because the way our defense has looked the past couple of weeks, we might be the game that Peyton starts instilling that sort of variation that he's known for. We might start seeing a couple of the spice looks, especially as Bree quite rightly pointed out with Dulcich being back. They kind of have their Taysom Hill because Dulcich, as much as he's a tight end and he hasn't really thrown many passes, that dude is athletic. He can do some of the stuff that the Saints ask of Taysom Hill. So it might be, we might be the sort of, don't want to say punching bag, but we're the sort of testing ground for some of Peyton's innovation potentially.
I just want to come on to Brent DeWitt, who has got a super chat in there for $2 with a score prediction. Thank you, Brent. You're the best. He says Lions 37, Broncos 31. I hope you're right. We're going to come on to our score predictions in just a second, but we're going to talk defense for the Broncos. And I can tell you that this is one of the most unique defenses in terms of formation I have seen in some time because, and Ash, I know you'll have seen this already. And Ant, I don't know if you've seen my prep docs. You may not have done. Would you like to take a wild swing at the defensive formation, which is their most prevalent? What do they play the most in? Ant?
I can't guess because I've seen it, as you know.
No. So they of course, play the most in nickel. We know that every team does. They play the most snaps in 2-4-5. Two down linemen, four linebackers, five DBs. They also play 3-3-5. Of course they do. But a combined amount of 59% in those two formations, but 38% in 2-4-5 was shocking to me when I first looked at that. Because how many teams do you know play with two DTs and nothing else on the front of that defensive line? That's weird.
Yeah, but think about the type of player they draft, though. That's how you fit it. Like Raheem Sanders. I mean, sorry. Drew Sanders. Drew's an outside linebacker who you bring off the edge, who plays as part of that four in there. Thomas Nkume, who they bought in, does similar as well. They draft
Such a fan of Thomas Nkume.
But they draft guys specifically for the system. So maybe it's not a surprise because, you know, they're these hybrid outside linebacker types they use. And of course, they've gone out and got some pretty good dominating DTs in there, which you need to run that. So I don't actually find it surprising given the type of player that they go after. And, you know, those DBs can more than make up for it. You can bring them up to the line. You can do all sorts with them. So probably puts teams off the game a little bit coming up against something like that. But certainly given who they play and who they draft, that's not actually a surprise, really.
And actually, I think the other factor of it, and we'll come on to them in just a second, is that they got two inside linebackers they can't take off the field. Normally, you want to just play with one. And, you know, you fit the outside linebackers around them. But in Josie Jewell and Alex Singleton, they've got two guys who, they may not be the best inside linebackers in the world, but they're good enough that them leaving the field is worse than whoever you replace them with. Ash, what do you think?
Yeah, I completely agree. As you say, we're both fans of sort of their inside linebackers duos. Like, they're both really damn good. Like, and as Ash says, you can mix in some of the other guys as well. So Drew Sanders could play inside Baron Browning, who I know our lads on ESPN list as an outside linebacker, but obviously in college he was an inside linebacker as well. They've just got that ability to mix it up with all their linebackers and mix up the look. So yeah, one snap they might have the two traditional edge rushers out there, but the next snap, because they anticipate a bit more pass rush and because Vance Joseph likes to blitz a lot with his inside linebackers, they might put it so yeah, Jewel Sully on the outside and he's covering the tight end. And you have Drew Sanders coming through the middle as a blitzing middle linebacker. The fact that they can mix up all those looks, is one of the reasons they do it. So obviously another team that I have looked up to prove it because I did think it. Pittsburgh as well, another famously blitz-heavy, man-coverage-heavy team, really good defensive lineman. They also are prevalent in the 2-4-5. Admittedly, it's only about 15 snaps more than they play traditional 3-4 defense, but it's just this scheme where if you blitz heavy and you trust your defensive lineman and your linebackers to do what they need to do, you can go for these sort of linebacker heavy looks because it just gives you a lot of versatility in the 3-4 that you traditionally don't have elsewhere.
Let's come on to the defense specifically then. So their tackle leader is Alex Singleton, 3 passes defended, 2 fumble recoveries, 2 sacks, 136 tackles, 5 tackles for a loss, 4 quarterback hits, PFF grade of 58.3. Sack leader is outside linebacker and rookie. He is a rookie, isn't he? Nick Benito? Second year. 1 interception, 2 passes defended, a forced fumble and 2 fumble recoveries, 1 for a touchdown, 7 sacks, 27 tackles, 11 tackles for a loss, 18 quarterback hits and a PFF grade of 63.8. Pat Surtain, my number one cornerback in the NFL. Others will disagree. They can fuck themselves. 1 interception, 10 passes defended, 50 tackles, PFF grade of 70.8. Safety Justin Simmons, 3 interceptions, 7 passes defended, 2 forced fumbles and a fumble recovery, a sack, 51 tackles, a tackle for a loss, PFF grade of 61.6. Other good grades in there, McMillan, the cornerback we mentioned earlier, and Bree mentioned him as well. 75.2. PJ Locke, the safety, 71.9. Zach Allen, the interior defensive lineman, 71.6. And Josie Jewell, the inside linebacker, 71.1. But here are the bad grades. Defensive tackle, backup defensive tackle, Purcell, 49.6. Backup defensive tackle, Henningsen, 54.1. Safety, Turner Yell, 40.9. No relation. Cornerback Teferi Mathis, 35. And linebacker Drew Sanders, 34.6. They've not graded well in quite a lot of positions. I do think that's because they were exposed to the Broncos defense, which was historically bad earlier on in the season and have not had a huge look in since. It's not that they haven't got there. It's more they haven't had the number of snaps to make it up yet. In terms of efficiency, this defense turns it on. Third down, 50 conversions on 155 attempts. That is 32.3%, is second in the NFL. Fourth down, 14 completions, conversions on 31 attempts is 45.2%. That is 10th. And 24 touchdowns allowed on 46 red zone trips is 52.2%. That's 12th in the NFL. And so, boys, when you have a look at those names that we've just listed and those efficiency metrics, it doesn't sound like a team which is 31st ranked in the NFL and 32nd in total run defense. But it sounds like a defense that had its issues on first and second down earlier on in the season. But on third down, on fourth down, and then the red zone tightens it up. And so situational football is going to be absolutely key for the Lions offense on Saturday.
This is why stats are misleading. I mean, it's all very well. People say they've got a bad run defense. They're not good against the run. But if you tighten it up when it gets to where it matters, it doesn't really matter. All you're doing is letting your opposition bleed a load of clock and not score the maximum amount of points on you. If you're able to tighten it up, then, you know, it's not that bad. And again, you're talking about young guys who are learning. It's a defense that's clearly getting better. I mean, in the last, 7 games, they've given up single digits 3 times. Like, you know, nearly 1 in every 2 games, you're restricting a team to less than 10 points. So yeah, you're giving up a lot of yards on the ground. You're giving up, you know, a little bit here and there. But when it matters, you're holding them in the points category. And that's all that really matters come the end of the day. And I mean, let's face it with this team. What are you going to do against this team? You're going to throw on that secondary? Hell no. I'm not throwing against Justin Simmons. I'm not throwing against Patrick Surtain. I'm not throwing against these guys. See the number of picks they've got this year and pass breakups. It's just, They turn the ball over. The way the Broncos have been winning a lot of games is they get turnovers, and they get turnovers because teams are throwing on that secondary. I don't really want to do that. So, of course, I'm going to try and overload the run game, and I'm going to try and do it that way. But it comes to a point where you've got to. So you've got to mix it and match it for this. I mean, people say run the ball, run the ball, run the ball, but you've also got to get smart with it. You saw what we did against the Bears. We were not aggressive enough against the Bears, and they stacked the box. They stopped you doing what you got to do. You do have to try and engineer ways to get at these guys. This is where J-Mo is going to be big again, and I'm fed up saying this, but he's like critical against the team like this. If you want to do what you want to do normally, you've got to use him and put those guys on in the secondary on notice. He's an elite weapon, and we're against some elite defenders here. So I'm just going to lie to the narrative that we've just got to run this ball and it's going to be simple and we're going to win. It's just simply not going to happen. When you get to the end zone and you're at a 3rd and 7 and you're at the 8-yard line, you've got to throw it into the end zone. I don't really be one of doing it in that situation where Goff's getting pressured and he's trying to throw a 1-on-1 against Satan. So it's all in roundabouts here. You've got to be very careful with them. They are not giving up many points at all, and there's a reason for that.
Yeah, the scary thing for me is, and people who watch our live reaction shows will know how much turnovers from our offense have been making me stress the past couple of weeks. You look at the stretch from the Bears game till now, they have got at least one turnover in all but one of those games, and the one game they didn't was against the Texans. In some of those games, the past 1, 2, 3, about 6 weeks, so that includes the Chiefs game just before the bye, they've got at least two. From the rate that we've been turning over the ball in the past couple of weeks, that's what really scares me, because that's what's been the difference in these games. You give them the chance for them to get their defense off the field, get their offense back onto the field. They can score on you, because it's impossible to hold teams out forever. So even if Aaron Glenn suddenly does have a defensive turnaround, which we might do as a commentator later, there's some stats that maybe show that we might have a slight advantage, some slight things that might pay our favours in terms of the offence. If we just keep handing them the ball back, saying, here you go, we might have stopped you this time, but here, have another go, they're going to happily oblige. And that's the thing that scares me, because we've been turning the ball over like nobody's business the past couple of weeks. And we're coming up against one of, if not the best defence in the league at creating turnovers since they started their defensive turnaround.
I completely agree with Ant as well in terms of just how you need to attack this team. And we've seen it with teams that have faced us recently. We have had to face teams that do not respect our deep ball game, and why should they? And they're bringing their defense up. Well, this team does that naturally. That's where they live. They don't have to adjust to us. That's where they want to play. And you better believe that all of the run blitzes we were facing last week are going to come. Because I know we're not really talking about the matchups yet, and I want to talk about the Chargers game first. But in that Chargers game, there were suddenly blitzes all over the place. Run blitzes, zone blitzes, pass, you know, like just all over the place. It wasn't like watching a Vikings team blitz the ball. It was more time than that. But when she was harping on about Vance Joseph maybe getting assistant coach of the year for the 31st ranked total defense, or 30th total defense, or whatever it is, you can see why with what they're doing right now. I mean, Herbert was fit for a half last week, and Chargers look awful. I mean, they had the ball in an end goal situation. They held up against that fine. I think he started 1 for 6 with an interception. Like, Chargers looked all at sea because the Denver defense was putting them under huge pressure. And I'm coming into this game fearful about what they might do, because they have really turned it around. And, you know, the Chargers are meant to be good running the ball because they have one of the premier running backs in the NFL. And it just didn't happen for them. So I'm looking at us and what we do with Gibbs and all that sort of stuff. And I'm like, we better try and throw the ball deep. Because if they don't respect that game, I don't understand how we're going to be able to run the ball in this game, because they're very good at it. They might not be, you know, stopping us after 3 or 4 yards. They might give us some 5 or 6 yarders, but they're not going to give us the 20 or 30 yarders that we've seen Gibbs pull off. And then suddenly they'll get one tackle for a loss. Now you can't pass in second at 12. What are you going to do? And that's going to kill drives for us the way we've been playing recently.
And yeah, that's what this, you know, the 2-4 kind of does to you. They can bring guys up to do that to you, to stop you early on first down and to put you into that situation. And then you're in trouble. I think, you know, everything's so skew-whiffed by that Dolphins game. I mean, you look at the defense and they're like 33 touchdowns given up on the year. That's a lot. No, 10 in that one game alone. So it all of a sudden goes down to 23 touchdowns in 12 games. They're giving up less than 2 a game. Like, that's not much. You're not able to score much on them. And it's all skew-whiffed by that one game. Like, they are mean. Three teams. The Chiefs, they kept to less than 10 points. Like, who does that? Who keeps the Kansas City Chiefs, like, down to less than 10 points? So, you know, it's got to be respected so badly. And again, this is where they can get away with the lack of a pass rush. Because if you do go running on early downs and you don't get the yardage, then you're playing right into their hands and they've got the players on there to stop you running early. They don't need to pressure a quarterback. They'll hit your run game and then they'll let the secondary wipe up without putting a guy under serious pressure. So, you know, it's just so misleading to look at it all just because a couple of games have really skew-whiffed the stats for them. You've got to take them out and then look at it over a bigger sample size without that whooping they got by the Dolphins.
Ash, let me put this to you as well, because, I mean, we've gone fully into just talking about the matchup at this point. Lions on offense, we've talked about the need to throw it deep, but maybe the biggest thing, and there was a question on this too, from Lost Oceans, saying with both coaches having worked together in New Orleans, do you see it as either coach trying to out-coach the other in any way, whether it's trick plays or being more aggressive, etc.? And this feeds into this offense in particular. We are trying to get our own Alvin Kamara on the field. That is what Gibbs is for. Well, guess who has the most experience with that sort of offense and how to play it on defense? So when it comes to trying to play against this team, Sean Payton's going to know what to do. And there might be a certain element of Dan Campbell trying to play chess with him. And I love Dan Campbell as a head coach, but you are going up against a Hall of Famer who knows what to do in this sort of thing. Is it, in general, a matchup that you are more apprehensive about because of that dynamic?
Yes, 100%. Well, Dan was asked about it. It was either today or yesterday, one of his presses, and he said as much. He knows, I think it was yesterday because it was Colton Pouncey tweet that asked it in the press conference. He asked about this relationship, and Dan says he expects Sean to be sort of playing that sort of game. So I expect him to. And we all know, we've seen it the past couple of weeks when Dan has gone to these sort of the fake punts, these fourth down conversions, fourth down. It's been an emotional decision. This is a game that will have emotional implications for him. So I do expect Dan to act a bit more, I don't want to say irrationally, because he usually does do it in good points and stuff, usually do good points, but I do expect him to have a bit more of the heart behind the decisions rather than the head. So I can see us going for a couple of those trick plays, maybe a fake, but just these things to sort of catch the master at, like, unawares. It's kind of like, I don't know, the Karate Kid, where you go away and you learn a new martial art to impress the master, just to catch him off guard, to make get that sort of, you know, like that wry light nod, like, yes, you have impressed me, my young Padawan. I can see that for him. And I can see, like, yeah, I'm mixing so many vegetables there, like Karate Kid, Nearly Snuck in Kung Fu Panda there, Star Wars. That's what it is. This is the master versus the apprentice. And we've seen it with the press regime where it worked in our favour. The apprentice managed to stop the master this week. I don't know.
And you just said master, and actually someone pointed out with Bree's surname being Maester that actually is some sort of derivative of master. So, yeah, and she did it also, a lot.
And it also, because to go back, it's one of the times I could pull out Latin. The Romans also had a saying called Mos Maiorum, which kind of sounds similar grains, and it means the ways of the ancestors. Again, learning from the ancestors, learning from those who came before and learning from them. That is what this game is, and it's going to be fun for us to watch, to see how it plays out, but at the same time, it's going to lead to probably a lot of reaction stuff that's going to come out in the next couple of days in TikTok, where I'm going to be head in hands, or you're turning away facing the wall, because there's going to be moments where maybe we do make those dumb decisions and they don't pay off, and we're going to be like, oh, for God's sake.
We're going to come on to the Lions' defense now. And I think this is a very similar situation to what we've just been talking about for the Lions, because Russ has been good with the deep ball, but he hasn't had much intermediate game. And actually, he's become a bit of a dump-off merchant in recent weeks, and that's how he has lived. And it's worked. But if you have a look at how the Lions operate, especially in two-minute offense, it is a lot of let the wide receivers run up and dump it off to the tight end or running back to get yards. And it's worked very well for them. He is high on completions, low on yards per attempt, but efficient on offense. We know how to play this game very well. And even outside of that sort of drill, you've got him just completing passes short. And the Lions know how to play against a team that throws it short and plays near the line of scrimmage. I mean, Brian Branch and Jerry Jacobs, that's what they do best, attacking behind the line, getting tackles for a loss. So when it comes to looking at the Lions offense, you might say, well, the Broncos might have, you know, an edge here or there. But I'm looking at the other side of it and thinking, well, maybe we do as well.
But I'm looking at the side of it where I'm not sure about our coordinator. I'm not sure about his ability to game plan properly. And we're coming up against one of the most savvy guys in the game. Like, on paper, yes, we do. We have the tools here. Like, you've got to stop their run game first and foremost. Three guys in there. You have got to really shut that down. We can do that. We've spent all season been really good against the run. So then they do start going to all the dump off stuff with Russ, with, you know, using those guys. And we can bring guys up and we can stop that. But at the same time, Peyton just doesn't do it all the way the same time. That's what's good about him. You don't just stay stuck in your ways doing the same stuff all the time, which is what the Lions are trying to do on offense. They're trying to stick to their identity. They've been stubborn. They're not using their playmaker when they should be, and they can't set the game up because of it. Look at their receiver core, like Judy, Sutton, Mims, a lot of speed, a lot of playmaking ability. You could be damn sure they're going to use those guys and hit us in the middle of the field where we are poor at being able to defend against. Those guys will eat against it. He's not just going to sit there and throw screens and play into what we do good. He will adjust. And unfortunately for us, they've got an O-line that's in form, and our D-line is, I mean, it was much better the last game, and hopefully that carries on. But they have the tools to counteract what we do. It's not just as simple as saying, this is what they do, we can counter that, because Peyton mixes up what he does. And you can be damn sure that we'll be using those three guys. Mims, I expect to see a lot in this. The guy's quick. He's shifty. He can hit you everywhere. Like, and Sutton and Judy are just playmakers. And they got good tight ends when it comes to receiving anyhow. Like, I worry about it because it's such a versatile offense. It doesn't just set in its ways and what it can do. You think a lot of the other teams they play against, again, Chargers, Chiefs, guys like that, fierce defensive lines that are going to hit you quick. So they have to get it out quick. They have to throw screens. They have to throw dump off because he's under pressure so quickly. We don't have that kind of firepower at our disposal. You're going to get a bit more time and you can be sure they will adjust to it. So I don't know. I just, my defense has got to prove it to me now. I know it's been good. I don't think it's been as bad as a lot of others are making it out to be, but oh no, I don't like the versatility their offense has. I think it will adjust. They're not going to play into our hands.
What do you think, Ash?
I think, well, I agree that completely they're going to adjust, but there are some trends that point our way that maybe our scheme might have a tiny bit of success holding them. And it's, again, it's coming back to the man versus zone splits. So looking at, because obviously the preview got all the stats, looking at their receiving grades versus man and zone, there's a clear trend that when they face zone, their passing game is worse than when they face man. So, for example, Cortland Sutton, 30th of all the wide receivers that PFF have got ranked, 30th against man with a 76.9 receiving grade, but 86th against zone, 63.2. Troutman, 35th tight end against man, 63.6 grade. 91st out of 92 tight ends against zone, 46.5. We're obviously this year zone heavy. It didn't work so well last week. we'll remember me overreacting to Komet having that really easy completion against the zone. But this week with how he plays zone, it's seemingly Russ is weaker against that than he is against man. So it might be a game where our sort of zone heavy scheme works. We still need to throw in the man. Obviously, we can't just go 100% zone because he will pick that apart. But given our zone heavy emphasis, we might have some success. I'm not saying we're going to hold him to like 150 yards passing and no touchdowns, but hopefully we won't have some of these big plays that have been plaguing us, and we will be able to sort of keep them in check for the most part, where it's not going to be like a duel like it was against Justin Herbert. It might be a game where it is a bit closer, and again, the run game can come into it, as we'll come on to in a minute, and it just will be sort of like that almost, I don't want to say defensive struggle, but it will just be we're both smashing against each other, we'll both get wins and losses, and it'll be closer than maybe some people think.
It's really interesting to talk about this offense, and I urge everyone to go to the Let's Talk Broncos YouTube channel to watch the good, the bad, and the ugly from the Broncos' victory against the Chargers episode they had a couple of days ago, because it was illuminating. And just watching that Chargers game, you can see what Bree was talking about with Jerry Jeudy. He is not it at the moment. And I don't know whether it's an at-the-moment thing. Bree said that, you know, he just doesn't do what Russ wants him to do well. He does well what Russ doesn't do well. But one of her contributors, co-contributors, uttered these words: we could have got a third round pick for him at the deadline, and at the moment that looks like really good value. Which may surprise a lot of people, but he had two deep balls go his way, went about 25, 30 yards in the air. They weren't the best throwing balls in the world, but they weren't bad. And he just outright dropped them. He wasn't close to getting them. And then there were a couple of balls that were slightly contested, and he's just terrible at the catch point. So when Judy's on the field, I mean, if Judy has a good game, you'll know you're in trouble, because Cortland Sutton on the other side is on an absolute tear right now, 10 touchdowns for himself in the receiving game. If Judy's out there, I'm more hopeful, if anything, because Marvin Mims, they are all calling on that stream for Marvin Mims to basically be giving the starting job over Judy at the moment, hence the name Judge Judy of this show. The offense is, I think, in transition from what it thinks it did best to what it is doing best. And it depends whether they actually get a handle on doing that right now, because if they do that on Saturday, we will be in trouble. They don't throw over the middle of the field. You're right about that 100%. Like, it's not what they do. And Russ, as a smaller quarterback, well, of course, throwing outside the numbers is a bit easier for him because there's a lot more field of vision for him. So our linebackers have been playing much better. So what? They're not out, actually out on the perimeter. But you know how he has struggled sometimes in coverage? Cam Sutton and Jerry Jacobs. So that could be a really interesting matchup for us, where actually if they lean on that a bit more heavily, as Ant is talking about changing things to try and exploit our weaknesses, if they can do that more, I really think that it could be a long day for the Lions defense. I'm swinging between things, but if we were able to see it after a couple of games of watching this team, you'd like to think Sean Payton could too. Let's come on to some matchup thoughts overall and a score prediction from you guys. And I'll come to you first. How do you think the game will go? And what's your score?
I think it's going to be a very tough game. It's going to have its highs, its lows. I think it's going to go back and forward. It's tough. It's all about, have we learned our lessons, like from weeks previous, the offense? Have you learned your lesson? We can't just establish the run and the play action pass. Like, you've got to make a team respect you. You've got to use JMO to spread the field. If you don't, they're going to stack the box, and you're not going to be able to run the ball. It's, you know, they say you've got to establish the run to set up the pass. We have to establish the pass to set up the run. We have to do it the other way around, because teams know exactly what we're going to do. And we played right into the Bears' hands with that. And if we do it again, the Broncos will do exactly the same to us. So have they learned that? Are they going to get the deep threats involved? Are they going to try something a little bit different to lighten that box, to allow us to use Monty and Jameer? If you can do that, we're going to score enough points on this team, because their offense, it doesn't generally score a hell of a lot. Like, it doesn't often go 30, 40 points. If you can put 30, if you can put 30 at Ford Field, we'll win, because they will not score that many, I would hope, anyhow, depending. But have they learned their lessons there? Defense, have you learned your lesson? You know, are you going to be able to adapt in game and see what they're doing against you? Are you going to be able to stop the run? And then are you going to be able to hold it up well enough against the receivers? I just don't like it. They've got too many playmakers and there's too much they can do, and they've got a coach who knows how to utilize them. So I think it's actually going to be a little bit of a high scorer, this one is. But I do expect us to win. This is a statement game that we need to win. Like, this is big. I can't say how big this game is. We can't be going to the Vikings next week with another loss. We just can't. So I think we're going to win. I think it's going to be along the 34 to 31 margin. But it's going to be very close. It's going to be nervy. It's going to be cardiac cats this week. It's not going to be a blowout.
What do you think, Ash?
I agree. But I'm going even more cardiac cats. I think this game's going to be very close. I think the Broncos score more times, but we score more points. I'm going 21-20 to the Lions. I'm going nail-biting victory. I'm going Jared Goff, Bears heroic against the a couple of weeks ago, that kind of thing, where in the fourth, they score a field goal. They go up 20-14. Goff has a two-minute drive. He has to go lead the game and drive yet again. And it works. And we score a last-second touchdown to pull it out from the Padawan overcomes the Master, cuts off Count Dooku's head and becomes the Darth Vader.
Well, this is going to be fun. I'm picking the Broncos. They are the hot team in the NFL. Schematically, while I like the matchup for the Lions, I like it for the Broncos as well. And the Lions are out of sync on offense at a time coming against a team that can't seem to stop getting turnovers. That don't add up to a great game for the Lions unless they have a total switch around. I'm going 37-31 Broncos. And I don't feel good about it, but I've tried to play this as close to a straight bat as I can. I picked this as a loss in preseason, and like Ash was saying, a few games in, you were chalking it up as a dub. But the way they've been playing, I don't think you can pick this as a win. I really struggle to see how the Lions have a decent route to victory. And it comes to back to what Ant was saying about throwing to open up the run, and I don't think they're going to do that. They've actually, the Lions have shown themselves to be actually quite stubborn about not going away from what they perceive their identity to be, and if they do not adapt, they will fall. And I think this will be finally the game where they go, we need to make a change. Not in terms of like firing someone or anything like that, but we need to think about how to do this differently, and we don't set our identity at one point in the season and run with it, but that we need to be more flexible than we have been.
You know, Dan talks about, you know, they want their Alvin Kamara in there, but what did the Saints always have to set their Alvin Kamara going? They had a Michael Thomas. They've got a Chris Olave now. They've got an elite offensive weapon who stretches the field and demands attention so that you can use him properly. So if Dan does want to emulate his boss, then he's going to need to learn that. It's, yeah, you can't be stubborn to just think your way is going to work. Even the Patriots, when they were good, had methods to win when their way didn't work, because Bill's not that stubborn. So, yeah, that is my big worry with this team. You've bought in JMO for this very reason, and the kid's working incredibly hard, and you're just not using him. And at this point, it's becoming a big stain against the coaching staff that they're not doing this properly. So hopefully, just fucking go out there and kill them. Really, please. We're on the verge. We're on the cusp here. You're at home. You're going to have the crowd. Come out strong. Keep them on with you. Because if we come out like we did with the Bears and we're 10-0 down after a quarter, that crowd will turn toxic. And you can bet your ass it will turn toxic, and then all of a sudden it could unravel very quickly. No pulse, no coming out first two or three drives, just trying to run. Just don't do that. Please, I'm begging you.
Our picks on the season so far are our consensus picks. We are 8-6, 8-5 so far. So we have chalked this up for a win for the Lions in our consensus picks. Six of us picked a win. I was the only person to pick a loss in preseason. But we are 2-3 in the last five. So let's see what happens with that. We've got a question or two to address. We're going to do that after the audio pod ends. If you want extra time with us, you know where to find us on YouTube and Twitch for the extra time. Our next episode will be the live reaction show with me and Ash on the call Saturday night starting 1 a.m. UK time. That's 8 p.m. Eastern time. I hope you can join us for that. The College Football Podcast is going to be going up on the podcast channels and the YouTube channel as soon as I can. So bear with, and that will be up shortly. You'll be able to watch that then. And then the review show, we're going to keep that on Monday, despite us playing on the Saturday night. It gives us a bit more time to have a look back and diagnose exactly what happened one way or the other. Don't forget to follow us on our socials, Roar the Lions UK on YouTube, Twitch, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. And the group for worldwide fans is Detroit Lions Fans UK, one pride worldwide. The website, rotluk.com. Please don't forget to subscribe, rate us 5 stars, send us a like on YouTube. That would be fantastic. Our thanks as well to Bree from Let's Talk Broncos, who are absolutely fantastic. If you want a show of theirs to watch about the Lions, they had a stream just a day ago entitled Are the Detroit Lions the Denver Broncos' Greatest Remaining Challenge? I urge you to watch that. Just remains for me to thank my co-hosts, Ant and Ash. Thank you, guys. Great pod, as always. My name's Matthew Turner, and we'll see you for the game. Division's almost in the bag, boys. Just win, baby. Let's go, Lions. One pride.
One pride.